Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Small businesses employ about one half the workforce in this country. Consequently, when small businesses are overtaxed, overregulated, and/or denied access to capital, we all suffer. Here to talk about these issues is Steve Posiosk. He is the president of the American Consumer Institute, which is a nonprofit research and education organization. Steve, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, this is some very interesting subjects, and you've also got a study, which actually is a collection of essays on small businesses, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'd like to put it in perspective for our listeners, the impact of small businesses on our economy. Now, we hear about small businesses suffer over this or that, and but put it into perspective. Tell us what small businesses mean to us as an economy.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, the small businesses account for about half of the employment and half of the gross domestic product here. The thing to think about is when we have a growing economy, an expanding economy, however, they contribute to 65% of the new jobs in the economy. However, they're in a decline, it's exactly the same. We'll get about a 60 to 65% decline in small business as their contribution to the economy. So what we have here really is like the canary in the coal mine. Small businesses really tell us where the economy is going. And with the slow economy right now, small business formation is down from where it was just a couple years ago and really hasn't bounced back. So it's really important. I mean, we're talking about these firms are the smallest of firms. In fact, 70% of them have no employees at all, and 52% of them have their primary office at home. So to some extent, these really are entrepreneurs. These are people who work at home. These are the eBay moms. These are the creators of really business formation in our economy.
That's amazing about the 65% impact. I had no idea. And that is so when a small business suffers, there is actually a much greater impact on the economy than if a larger business is suffering.
Right. They're the first to go up and the first to go down when things are good and when things are bad. And it's amazing when you start to think about who these are. I mean, these are really the creators of technology to a large extent. For example, when we look at just patents, the creation, the entrepreneurs, there are 17 times more patents from small businesses per employee than we have from other firms. So this is where ideas and innovation starts, and it's really important that we encourage business formation, small business formation, because this is really where jobs are created, where ideas come into fruition, and real wealth is created in society.
Wow, and then the impact of it. I mean, I've always heard about the impact, but you really are putting it into some concrete terms for us to understand that when we're suffering, our small businesses are suffering, and that's not a good thing. How has the economy now? We're seeing fewer startups and small businesses, so that means a lessening of employment. So what we really need to do is to encourage small businesses. But is our environment doing that?
Well, there's two sides. There's a positive side is how technology is really changing what's happening there. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. And then there's a second side, which I'd like to address later, which is about the whole nature of their business environment. What I see as barriers to entry for business formations.
Okay.
So looking at the positive side first, I mean, there's really just been a technology revolution over the last 40 years.
Oh, no kidding. I just got a smartphone.
Yeah. So we have like an exponential increase in computing speeds. We have exponential increase in hard drive capacity. We have falling transport costs. And the combination of that over the last 20 years has moved and 30 years has moved us from things like mainframes to minis to micros to desktops to internet devices. And from where we have the computing done, from data centers and central offices, they've moved us to businesses, to homes, and now we're moving to what's called the cloud. The whole ability of these servers to have connections where people can operate from their home and do the commuting, the computing, they can do the storage, the retrieval, they can do a lot of applications remotely just from their desktop.
Well, I always think of the cloud as something that's kind of, you know, puffy and soft, but we're really talking about computers, but they're off-site computers that we're communicating with. Is that a kind of simplistic way of talking about the cloud?
Yeah, the cloud really is like is sort of the online use of like storage and computing equipment. It's how we retrieve, download, and store our videos, our pictures, our music.
Sure.
How we use emails.
Because we don't carry them around with us on our little devices.
Right.
They're stored somewhere else, I would say, off-site. I mean, you know, I used to run out, Steve, and look for those clouds that had all the little antennas sticking out. Couldn't find them, and I knew I was wrong.
Now, you do a search online. There was all that application was running somewhere else in a server, maybe in Washington State or in California.
Exactly.
And so, but for small businesses, it's really become a way for them to look like they're a big firm, but operate as a small firm. And mm-hmm. they can do that without having the expertise, without having the technical staff, without having the infrastructure. What they're able to do is use these online applications and appear to be large. And what that's done is changed the whole, it's leveled the whole playing field for small businesses versus other businesses. What we see is the whole economies of scale, how these businesses operate has really changed. What we can see is success through technology of smaller firms being able to go head-to-head with their larger counterparts.
Well, and, because they, first off, they can use technology to get the information out there, can't they?
Right. And so what we see now is that small businesses, you can work in one state and you can have access to customers in another state by using broadband technologies, emails, web pages. You can search. You can do through markets and other applications. You're marketing to your customers. What's happening now through the internet has enabled these small businesses to start up and to operate in like a borderless economy with
e-tail. My son runs a small business, and he was just telling me the other day about he was finding a new product that he wanted. And he was price shopping it on the internet. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how you can do these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's like online shopping, there's online marketplaces, e-tail, and these technologies are allowing just businesses to function completely different from back office processing to storage, ordering, shipping, scanning.
Well, Steve, are there barriers to small businesses being able to hook into the information technology revolution, for want of a better word?
Well, I think there still are some, but I think what we're seeing is the market is pretty open. We're in the sense that a lot of broadband technologies are available. What you're able to do for something, like I mentioned, cloud computing, it's a very scalable service. Since you don't have to buy all the infrastructure,
right.
You're only renting a shared portion of it. These costs are much more scalable. And one of the studies that we did recently looked at small businesses that work at home, and we demonstrate how they can save a lot of money because they use these technologies. They don't need to buy the real estate and the commercial office space.
Right.
And all of a sudden, their entry costs have dramatically reduced. And that's the biggest problem with small businesses, is to be able to get into market and have those entry costs reasonable.
Yeah, so you don't deplete all your capital at the beginning. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Posiosk. He is president of the American Consumer Institute, and it's a nonprofit organization on research and education. And they actually focus a lot on small businesses, technology, how they interact, and those are some of the things that we're talking about today. Now, you had mentioned that you had done a study about small businesses and IT and that sort of stuff. Is that information available at your website? Are there some places that we can send, particularly the entrepreneurs in our audience who might be thinking, how can I get a hold of a lot of this information? Is there some place they can go to get it?
Yeah, they can visit our website at www.theamericanconsumer.org.
The American Consumer. Okay.
It's theamericanconsumer.org. And so you can learn a lot about had included a whole lot of essays from about a dozen authors. And, we talk about things, how technologies have allowed businesses to locate. It's affected where they locate, how they operate. It has affected the size, enabling even the smallest of firms to compete with large companies.
Right. Right. Now, I would think that this is something, and I know you're not a business startup expert necessarily, but it would seem to me that when someone has an idea for a small business, that what they should do is become very familiar with technology if they aren't already.
Right. You know, one expert had confided in me a couple weeks ago that it was not only important to start with a business plan, but in some cases, depending on what you do, is to have a technology plan.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
It's just, very important that you plan these things out.
It doesn't have to be a huge, sophisticated plan, but you should have some goals and some ideas of how you're going to get there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. Well, now, the small business that we used to think of, the mom and pop, they had a little storefront, you know, they depended on their neighbors for business to come in. And you're describing a picture of small business now that is so different. Mom and pop may be sitting in a home working out with a computer and shipping orders from various suppliers where they, in fact, order it from. So there's a whole chain of people could be involved in one small operation.
Right. And you're having access to customers who might be sitting at an internet cafe,
mm-hmm.
and you're somewhere else. And some examples, you know, you could have somebody who's now selling outdated vinyl records, which, of course, you say, well, there's no market for that anymore. You can get everything online. But then again, you're online, and next thing you know, you're selling these records internationally because somebody's collecting them. But you never could have access to that market if your little business is in somewhere's out in the...
I'll tell you how. Now, here's an enterprising company. I've gotten hooked on this Canadian TV show that's in reruns in the United States. But I found that I can, and because it's old, I mean, it's not a brand new show, but it's not always available on my Netflix or whatever. And so I found a place where I can go online and pay a couple bucks and watch it. I mean, watch one of the segments. And I'm thinking, you know, why not? I mean, I'm going to try it. But it's so different. You used to have to sit and wait for it to come on TV. And of course, now people can use this. Businesses can use this. I mean, somebody's been very enterprising and gotten these videos, and they're putting them up for sale.
Yeah, it's really amazing, the whole nature of what's happened. And I think to a large extent, though, what we're seeing is that these technologies are allowing small firms to be able to compete head-to-head.
Oh, sure. They can start a business on the internet, and as long as they have a plan and, as you say, understand the technology and how to utilize it into what they want to accomplish.
That's right. So, you know, yeah, we did a study, and we had a number of experts provide authors.
Was there anything startling or surprising that came out of this?
Well, there are several things. Some I've touched on already is just
right.
How the technology has been so important to the economy.
Yes.
And how small businesses have been the same.
Well,
and
the size of their impact on the economy is what is,
that's right.
is amazing to me. 65%, even though about half of our workforce is work for small businesses.
Yes.
But when there's an upswing, about 65% of that workforce
right.
is affected by.
However, I have to say I don't have any evidence, though, that shows that the current rebound is being so kind on small businesses. This has been a tough rebound, and partly for a number of reasons. One is it's demand driven. You have to have demand to be able to go in and to start a business,
sure.
and you have to sell something that's unique. But the other thing is there are still barriers to entry that are inhibiting small business formation,
mm-hmm.
including one is just the whole idea of having access to capital. As well as the whole notion of regulations and taxes that.
The whole business of access to capital for small businesses. Put that into perspective for us. You can't really start a small business unless you can get a loan to do it. In most cases, is that correct?
Right? So
what's happening in that score?
Well, a couple things. First, we have a little problem in our real estate market. It's what's called an upside-down market, where people can have the amount they have left on their loan could be more than the value of their home. And what that does is it takes away the possibility of you have a great idea for a business, you can't get an equity loan now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first problem. So what that does is it pushes you towards either not starting that small business or holding back, and that's part of the problem, or going to a bank and trying to get a loan. But that's been pretty tough to do. When we start looking around at some of the the data on what's occurred. During the last recession, for example, there was a 20% decline in loans to small businesses.
Wow.
And last year, this is continuing. So here we are supposedly in the recovery. Last year, we had a 60% rejection of applications with banks by small businesses.
Now, is that extraordinarily high?
It is high. And so we can say, yeah, this is kind of the cyclical nature. People are trying to be careful. But the other side is, as an example, it's part of that. But it's also it's not that there isn't funds available, because data I saw indicated that during the recession, some credit unions did expand loans to small businesses by 40%. However, regulations say that these credit unions are capped in what they can provide because they're primarily giving to so-called consumer loans. So there's an example here where there's a regulation that's affecting.
So they might be willing to give more, loan more to small businesses if they didn't have a cap on what they can do.
Oh, and in fact, that's
why
exactly.
Do you know the rationale for the cap?
I think it probably is, some industry protection that's behind some of
from
that.
From the banking.
Yeah. I mean, so banks are able to, what the cap does really, it slows down the ability for the credit unions to compete against them.
Well, now what are the banks doing in terms of making loans to small businesses?
Well, they're a little more careful.
The record is not great.
They're holding back. So really that's where that's been going. So it's a tough market, but you have to keep in mind that, stimulating small business formation is essential because there are these huge multiplier effects that occur to the economy. And by multiplier effect, I'm saying that, by investing a dollar, in the end, you may create $2 and $3 elsewhere in the economy. So you end up creating other jobs.
Because those little arms from that small business go out into all kinds of areas.
Right. And then there's also competition effects, which are very healthy, which drive down consumer prices, because when firms compete, consumers win.
That's true. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Posiosk. He is the president of the American Consumer Institute. It's a nonprofit organization that does research and education on, it would be fair to say, on information technology and a lot of how it applies to small businesses. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is true.
Okay. All right. So let's go back and talk about the barriers to starting a small business,
right,
and what you're running into these days. And as you said, the access to capital has been restricted, artificially or because of economy. But the net result is that there are fewer small business startups. Is that correct?
That's right. So what we have now, we have fewer small businesses than we had several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing. And so what we're seeing is when we look at job creation and we're saying, well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released the report last Friday and everyone's saying, how slow the economy is growing. Well, it's like I said, it's like a canary in the coal mine. When small businesses aren't doing well, the economy is going to suffer.
Yes.
And it's really showing out in the basic data that we have.
Well, is this not taken into account in any kind of planning that's done to help the economy grow? I mean, where are we? Are we seeing that small businesses are overregulated and overtaxed, and maybe we need to take a new look at how small businesses are able to, the environment, I guess I should say, that a small business operates in?
I think that's a good idea because, one of the essays that were contributed to our booklet by Professor Crane looked at sort of the magnitude of federal regulation on the small business economy.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent is regulation and taxes present a burden on these businesses versus other businesses?
And you're talking about other businesses, larger employers.
Larger and mid-sized.
25 above employees or 50
right,
and above or somewhere in there.
Right. So really what their study did is they looked at small businesses and concluded that this is Nicole Crane and Mark Crane over at Lafayette College, and their conclusion was that small businesses face a 36% higher tax and regulatory costs, 36% more compared to medium-sized firms, not even
really?
Large firms.
My
right.
Gracious.
So, yeah, so even
that's
though
– I'm sitting here, 36%. So that hill to climb is a huge one for a small business.
Right, and that's why I kind of started with sort of the positive side saying, hey, technologies are a way to get over some of that upstart cost.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it's still rough going for small businesses. A lot of small businesses you know, just drop out after just a few years. Most of them do. But our findings are that once they're in and they've been around for a few years, they tend to last.
And they flourish and they're
right.
And they add to our economy.
But initially they drop off and most of them fail.
So now a lot of this has to do with the regulations that are in the way of starting a small business.
Right.
And we've talked about the fact that the capital is not there to fund them.
Right.
There are limitations on that.
Right.
And some of that is due to the economy, but some of that is probably built in concerns.
Yeah, I mean there is a Senate bill currently that's looking at trying to expand the credit unions' access to providing loans. Currently, it's a Senate bill at 2231. But other than that, we still are dealing with what appears to be massive regulations, both on the state level and federal level.
Tell us now, all right, these regulations, and you said that they cause, what, 30-some percent?
36% higher costs.
To the small business.
Versus medium size.
I mean, give me some examples of what are we talking about here? Are we talking about the ability to get a license, to set up a business, to what?
It's all of that. And some may come under the notion of occupational safety or environmental, and undoubtedly many of these are well intentioned, but the truth of the matter is they're targeting some businesses more than the others, or the burden is. Remember, these are very small firms, like I said.
So a small increase can be a huge amount, can make a huge difference in whether or not they turn a profit.
Well, think about if you have to sit around and just and fill out certain paperwork.
Forms.
Now you go to a doctor's office and they have to have several people now to do the forms.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like it when I was growing up. I mean,
nope. You
go in there and it was a lot different. And well, those represent costs, and those costs pass through to consumers in the form of higher prices.
Yep.
And it's that kind of thing. And it really affects the competitiveness of these firms, not just relative to larger firms, but also, you know, how they compete internationally.
Well, what about taxes? Now, we've touched on regulation and capital, but what about the tax burdens? How are they unnecessarily high on small businesses?
Yeah. And Crane's study shows that in particular, that the average tax rate for small businesses is higher than these medium-sized firms.
Really?
Yeah, and I really don't know the exact reason for that, but they go through a way of quantifying that and demonstrating it. But it's really something that I think certain groups like the Office of Advocacy and the Small Business Administration and other groups need to look at and find out. They by the way, were tasked with identifying burdens that it disproportionately affects small businesses. And so it's important.
Have they done their job?
Well, I think they do. What they do, though, is they provide information. In the end, it's policymakers that have to act on this information. These reports identifying these costs have been available for maybe the last decade.
So you're talking about Congress has to make changes, or is it regulatory agencies, or where do the changes need to come?
Yeah, I think it's state legislatures, regulatory agencies, and federal policymakers as well. I think everyone is a little bit of a responsibility in just assuming that some of these regulations are costless, and they aren't. And when they affect a business, they tend to affect the smallest of businesses. They tend to affect the 52% of businesses that work from home. They tend to affect the 70% of businesses that are so small that they have no employers. They're essentially entrepreneurs working.
Right.
And it's those kinds of fragile businesses that really need encouragement.
Well, they need a little help up the ladder, and I don't mean financial help necessarily, but to look at the whole environment in which they operate
right. And
to make it a complementary and environment where they can flourish. Well, Steve, you've certainly given us some things to think about. The website is www.theamericanconsumer.org. That's theamericanconsumer.org. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Steve Posiosk. He's the president of the American Consumer Institute. And you've been listening to us right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.